When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and someone who will always come back out for the second half. It's Nathan Bloody A Bloody Clark. Hello, Nathan. How are you doing?
That's me. I'm good, mate. I'm good. Yourself?
I'm okay. I'm sorry this is a bit late this week, everyone. We got there in the end, and we've actually got an extra match to talk about for being late, so worked out well, I'd say.
we arrived late into the box with immaculate timing. We waited until we lost in order to come talk about our recent games.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get cracking, shout out to Jeremy Cohen for his delightful email about the X-Subs content. Thank you so much, Jeremy. It was really, really nice to receive that. Content for the X-Subs this week has included Nathan's set piece analysis. Was that one fun to do?
No. I don't know, it's different. I decided that I wanted to be like thorough with it, so I did like nearly every single set piece from a run of three games, and some of them were not interesting. I probably could have trimmed it down a little bit and just done more of a highlights thing, but I wanted to... The thing is, it's like there's one little thing at each corner instead of like good ones here and bad ones there, so I don't know. It's not something I spent a huge amount of time thinking and focusing on before, so it was a tiny bit of a learning curve, and to see things in that way, it's interesting. It's been interesting.
Did you see the set piece goal that I retweeted from the Extra Inch account that Rowden posted?
Yes.
Insane. Like, so this was a match from years ago. Kane playing for the England, I presume, under-20s. And he flicks on to Connor Cody, who's playing in midfield at that point in his career, to score in almost exactly the same way that Kane flicked on for Son to score against Burnley. I don't know how Rowden... So Rowden is an avid youth watcher. He has a blog called Jules Rimet Still Gleaming. So his Twitter handle is Rowd, Rowdjrsg. He's a brilliant follow, absolutely amazing follow for all things youth, but just general. I mean, he's just very, very knowledgeable. I have no idea how he remembered that particular set piece. It is insane to me, but remarkably similar. Should we start with Antwerp, since it's fresh in our minds? We've all pretty much just watched it.
Could we not? Is that a genuine option that you're presenting when you ask that question?
Well, the option is we start with Antwerp or start with Burnley. It's not. Do we start with Antwerp or just not talk about Antwerp?
Oh, that's what I was hoping. Okay, all right. Well, in that case, let's get out of the way and end more positive.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to say this straight away. I don't think we need to lose our shit over it. I mean, there's been an utter meltdown on social media. And frankly, our manager is having a meltdown over it. I don't think that's necessary. It's not the end of the world. These games are what they are, and it's fine. We're still going to be okay in the Europa League. It's not a problem. Bardi, what did you make of the overall performance? Let's start with the sort of top line.
It was a mess. It was a total mess. But like you, I don't think there's too much to panic about. We lost the game. It's not going to affect our chances of getting out of the group. We'll still get out of the group at a canter. And I think it was a shame, because when I saw the starting lineup, I was quite excited. I was excited to see Ali back in there. I was excited to see Lo Celso starting. And Reguilón was playing, and another chance for Vinicius. And I was fairly positive, and I honestly thought we would blow Antwerp away. And in the first 10-15 minutes, I thought that's what was going to happen. But they were really good. They were really smart. You get sucked in sometimes when you see someone like Richie Delatt, who's this kind of journeyman footballer, and you think we're just going to blow through these guys. But they were really, the way they set up was very smart. I thought the big defender Sek, I thought he was going to have a nightmare, but he was really strong. And the Japanese chap Miyoshi, I thought he was excellent, and I was really surprised. And I think that's one of the nice things about Europa League. The other day we were watching Juventus Barcelona, and you know, you're thinking about European Super League, and it's just like these are two teams who are shadows of who they should be, meandering through this football match, and all of a sudden here's Royal Antwerp, who was just really interesting and playing a 3-4-3, and it was great. And yeah, I'm not going to lose my mind over it, but I thought it was nice. I thought it was nice to see a random team pop up and play good football.
They're good. They're a good side.
Nathan, are they better than you thought they would be?
I mean, I didn't have a huge grasp on them. I've watched I've watched a few Belgian division players in the last couple of years, so I've seen them, but I haven't, like, I didn't do prep for this particular match. Their right back who came on, Buta, I like. I've watched him before, but I didn't have a huge amount of knowledge about them, other than that they're having a good season at the moment, and they are traditionally one of the stronger clubs in the country. And it's a decent league as well. It's a decent league to watch. It's pleasant on the eye a lot of the time.
Yeah, no, that I mean, everything you've said there makes sense from the match we just watched. They were very well organised. Lots of experienced players, lots of sort of players in their early or mid-30s. And I thought that showed. They were very canny in the way they played us. They just sort of restricted space, stopped us really playing any useful balls over the top, which is, you know, what we've really looked to do a lot of recently. I'd get the ball forward quickly into the channels and work from that, and they just didn't allow that to happen, and it was really difficult to play against them. Four subs at halftime is the most notable talking point from the match, I think. How did you feel about that, Nathan? What did that indicate to you?
It indicates that Jose Mourinho is a messy bitch who loves drama. It's classic. It's classic. Like, I will do a groundbreaking thing. Observe, behold, before me, the four sub move. Woo! And it's like, it's the statement. It's not about, this player isn't doing this and we need someone who could. It was like changes across the board. It was literally just changing four players for the sake of changing four players. We didn't improve much. We improved a bit. All right, I'll give him that. We improved a bit. We took off players who didn't look match fit, especially for players who did. Okay, but it was more about the look how bad the team that I literally selected a couple of hours ago is statement, rather than anything especially tactical. And then what he said, I would have liked to have made 11. Is that?
Yeah.
Of course he said that. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it is what it is. I mean, okay, the conversation that's going to come from this game is, oh, you thought we had good depth, but actually all of these secondary players, they're trash. Vinicius couldn't score in a brothel. You know, Bergwijn, absolute trash. Need to go back to mainland Europe. You know, all these players you thought we had as good backup are terrible. But that's like, that's not what it is. What it is if you make that many changes at once, they just don't have that foundation. If you bring one of those players into our starting 11, I think they thrive. If you bring two of those players into the players who've played a game after a game after a game, they thrive. But this is a lesson that we have learned every Europa League year, so what, like 8 out of the last 12 years or something stupid. We keep learning again and again. If you make 9 changes, everyone is just off the pace. You need like that foundation, that bedrock to develop from. But if you throw out a bunch of players out there who haven't got any, you know, there's no single pairing of players who are familiar with each other, then a bunch of attacks sputter out. And I thought we did all right in the opening sort of 15 minutes of the game. We got the ball forward well. We got the full forward to attacking players. They looked to make combinations. Some of them were moderately promising. They didn't come off. And essentially the game ended there, right? We stopped getting in. I don't know if it was a matter of, I need to rewatch it. I might be worth rewatching whether Antwerp made any sort of tactical tweaks around the sort of 15 to 20 minute mark that made it hard for us. But it may just be that we became disheartened because a bunch of attacks busted out. We've been on this ridiculous run recently, up until the Burnley game, where we've scored from our first or second shot game after game after game, which is not something that is even vaguely close to sustainable. I think we have to just, like, we needed to sort of stick at it and deal with the fact that you can't always score off your first attack. And that's my suspicion anyway, is that as soon as things didn't immediately work out, oh my God, I suddenly realised that Harry Kane is on the pitch. Let's not try to play football at all. And then we panicked under their pressure. We punted it long to players who weren't running, players who weren't fresh, players who haven't been playing a run of games. And it didn't materialise for us. And so we made four subs at half time.
Yeah. And the thing is, you're right, him sort of trashing the players after the match, it's unhelpful. I guess, so a couple of comments on the substitutions and the rotation generally. I mean, the first thing to say is it did work against LASK, that rotation. You can make 10 changes against a team as poor as LASK. They were awful. Mm-hmm. We kind of knew they'd be awful because, you know, even when I sort of semi-jokingly ran through the players in their squad in the pod before, where I said, you know, they've got four Austrian players, but they've all made one appearance for the Austrian national team. It kind of implied we knew they were going to be quite a poor side. We just knew that, and they were quite a poor side, and we made easy work of it, and it was a solid, convincing win. This match, I mean, I didn't know what to expect from Royal Antwerp, but you'd expect that the people at the club would, and therefore that you perhaps can't make quite so many changes and get away with it this time around, and that was the case. And I guess the problem is you make the changes because you want to rest key players so they're fresh for the next game, but ultimately, in making so many changes, you have to then bring key players on for the second half. Yeah. So you end up playing them for more than you want to play them, which is counterproductive. So we had Kane and Son absolutely sprinting down everything in that 45 minutes trying to push for a goal. We don't really want to see that. I mean, that's the last thing I want to see, is Kane running his socks off in the Europa League, when we know what happens when Kane plays multiple minutes. It's not good. He needs breaks. So that was a shame, I thought. But yeah, I mean, I'm still in the position of it's not the end of the world.
The problem is this. There's too much football. Like I said, if you bring in one or two of those players into your constant 11, things work out fine. But we have to make that many changes because of how much football there is. An absurd, you know, three games a week, every week, yeah, forever. And this is always going to be the result. You know, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. If we don't rotate our 11, our players are run down and exhausted. Yeah. And if we do, there's at least decent chance that this will be the performance, despite how good they may well be individually. That's just how it goes. So
there's definitely a middle ground, though. There's a middle ground where you rotate a little bit every match. So you don't have a League 11 and a Europa League 11. You have a good 16 who can, all of whom can play in the league and be fine. And, you know, Lamela's played some league games recently and been really good, for example. I think that's a reasonable compromise. The problem is that Mourinho's now come out and basically said, I wanted to make 11 changes. And this is a direct quote: after tonight, my future choices are going to be very easy. So that's not happening. He wants to have a defined 11 for the Premier League and then, you know, the offcuts for the Europa League. Barty, sorry, you've been patiently listening, waiting for your moment.
No, the two things that really stand out for me is we now realise how important Ndombele is to this football club. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think this will be, it's obvious, you could see that. The other thing is this isn't new for Tottenham to be bad in away games in the Europa League. Historically, we have been kind of lapsadaisical and we just get through the games. Even in qualifying for the Europa League, we were pretty poor against Plovdiv, and I can't even remember the name of the Macedonian team anymore. But we have been like that, and we're going to get found out eventually. I do think Bergwijn, Lo Celso, Dele just not having minutes in their legs did hurt them, and I wouldn't throw them out the window immediately if I was Jose. I'd give them a little bit more. I'd be a little bit more patient with them. But I think the games are coming quickly and they've got a chance to redeem themselves in the next Europa League. I would still continue to make these changes in Europa League until we get to panic stations and then start everybody.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. I agree. I mean, personally, I would always prefer... If you've been that bad in the first half, but there's no real damage done, I would say it's always best to send the players back out and give them a chance to correct what they've done. Like, totally. To make up for their shortcomings. Particularly someone like Dele, who really does need minutes at the moment because he's barely played, and it would have been really useful for him to get some minutes in his legs because he's not going to improve, he's not going to get any better if he doesn't play, and his form will just continue suffering. It's kind of, again, counterproductive, I think. I felt that this performance, and this might not be popular, I felt it was a continuation of the Burnley match. And we need to talk about Burnley in a bit more detail. But I genuinely thought that it was a lot the same as the Burnley match.
I think that's fair.
And also, I wanted to pick up one point that Glenn Hoddle made post-match in the very, very brief analysis, which is something that I've been trying to make in a less articulate way a few times about our possessional play and our structure. They showed a clip of the goal we conceded and how we lost the ball when we had the ball on the left-hand channel. And he said, you know, they've committed lots of bodies forward, but they're all in straight lines. And that is absolutely right. That's the thing I've noticed with Mourinho's possessional structures. We often do have lots of players forward, but we don't make angles to receive passes. Mm-hmm. We're not situated in triangles. This could be a situational thing. It could be a confidence thing. I mean, I understand that the way Mourinho sets up attacks, from what I understand, is that he essentially tries to encourage players to use their own creativity. They create from within themselves. They are good players, and he gives them freedom to express themselves creatively. He doesn't ask them to sit in structures. But this has led, on numerous occasions, to us looking very literally flat in terms of playing it. You know, the players lined up across the pitch, which is problematic at breaking down set defences. Let's go on to Burnley now, because it makes sense. We saw against Burnley that, you know, Burnley are a well-oiled machine. They're not attractive on the eye, but they are incredibly well-coached. The detail of the coaching is quite sensational from Dyche. It's like, I don't know how he does it, but it's honestly robotic the way they line up and defend. It's really quite impressive. And one of the ways of breaking down teams like that is to have lots of players coming short for the ball and then another player rotating in behind. You know, you're trying to drag defenders out of position. You're trying to tempt them away from the position that Dyche has instilled in them that they have to be in at all times. We didn't do any of that. The Burnley match was, to me, and I appreciate we won the match, so we got the end result that we desired. To me, that was a really, really lackluster, poor performance against Burnley. And I think the result skews that, and people come away saying, you know, we showed grit and determination and we ground out a difficult away win, a difficult place. I mean, like, yeah, we did do that, but it didn't convince me any more that we are going to be able to break down packed defences. It was a lucky sort of victory where we'd headed one off a line and then went in and scored our own set piece. We didn't really deserve to win that match, and we didn't really deserve to lose it either. Like, it was probably a 0-0 game, but I'm still unconvinced that we can break down set defences. Not that I think that's easy. I appreciate it's really, really hard to break down well-coached teams. I do want to stress that. Buddy, again, I can see you're patiently sat there waiting for your moment.
I just think, I think part of our problem has been we've been so successful in playing quick that we blew Southampton, Man United away and West Ham for 70 minutes by going really fast and going long. And I think against Burnley and against Antwerp, we needed to show a bit of patience. And I think a lot of the time we ended up rushing things. And because going long has worked for us so many times, it's now Kane drops deep, spins and whacks one over the top. And even though obviously it's a bit more subtle than that, it's essentially what we're doing. And Burnley weren't ever going to allow that to happen. And I did smile when you said trying to tempt their defenders out. That just doesn't happen. It's impossible. Those guys, you can't tempt them. You can, like a well-trained dog, you waft a sausage under its nose. It's not going to break ranks and just come chasing.
They're so disciplined.
You. It's insane. And they stunk the place out. They are an awful football team in that sense, that they just will not allow you to play. And we needed to be smarter. But in the past, we would have lost that game. Many times we went there with Pochettino, with a better team, and we lost. And we didn't this time. We stuck in there and we didn't make any mistakes. Dyer tried his best, but we didn't make any mistakes, and we came away with 3 points. So I know you called it smash and grab, and I've seen you write that down a few times, but I don't think it was a smash and grab. I don't think we did anything to deserve winning it, but we didn't do anything to deserve losing it. And I think those points we lost against Newcastle have now come back. Lady Luck has delivered them back to us, so I think we're at par for the season now. You know, it swings and roundabouts. I think we're okay. But I just think we do need to be smarter with the ball, and we need to be more patient. And I didn't see what Hoddle says, but I completely agree. With how you described it. We do need people to come short and open up gaps for us.
I completely accept everything that both of you are saying, but if you train set pieces,
yeah,
and you score from set pieces, that's valid. And I do think, mm-hmm. if you watch the video, it's 45 minutes long, but to cut to the chase, our attacking set pieces are coming along nicely. Our defensive set pieces still have some work to do. We definitely got a little lucky clearing the ball off the line. I do think that was something prepared maybe there. They still need some work. It's a very difficult thing to do, but I do think that, like, you can win a handful of games that would have been 0-0 games or 1-1 games if you're the kind of team who are liable to putting up those kind of performances, which we very much are. Mm-hmm. Then you turn 1-pointers into 3-pointers at several points across the season. That's completely valid means of achieving those points.
That's a really good point.
Totally. Liverpool did it on occasion last season as well. Mm-hmm. When they didn't always blow teams apart, they did scrape a Van Dijk goal from a corner, or Jordan Pickford drops one on Origi's head. Maybe that was a season before. You are allowed to win scrappy games. Not every game has to be a demonstration of beautiful attacking flow in football. And with the run of games we've had, then I think I enjoyed that 1-0 just as much as, well, maybe not, but just as much as the 6-1 against Man United. I thought it was a turning point. I always do. And then we played Antwerp, and perhaps it wasn't. But I enjoyed that 1-0 win more than I've enjoyed many teams that we've thrashed 4-5-0.
No, I think they're good points. And Nathan, you're right. I mean, I've been calling on this podcast for about two seasons now for us to actually develop set pieces so that we have another means of scoring goals in games where we can't break down the opposition. So for me to sort of now say, well, we only won through a lucky set piece is a little bit wrong-headed. And yes, you're absolutely right. I guess the downside of that is you'll have games like the Newcastle match where the opposite happens, where you can't break the team down and the opposition scores a scrappy set piece. So it's perhaps not sustainable points-wise across the season. Actually, Bardi, the point you made about us being about par after Newcastle is absolutely bang on. If you look at the expected points from Understat, we are about where you'd expect points-wise. What you'll find on Twitter is people will say, well, if only we'd beaten Newcastle, we'd be X places higher in the league. And it's like, well, yeah, but you don't... overall, we have got roughly what we deserve, so it's kind of worked out okay. You've got to factor in things that work both ways.
So we're on 11 points and Opta have us at 10.66 expected points. So, yeah.
So it's about bang on. What was really interesting when I looked at that is where Brighton are, our next opponent. Man, I feel sorry for them because they are a lot worse off than they deserve to be based on their performances.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Have you Have you watched much of Brighton, Nathan?
Please do not feel sorry for the team that we were about to play. That has historically been a horrifically dangerous way to think. They'll be fine. They are playing well. They're putting up good performances. Results haven't gone their way. They've made mistakes here and there. They have been legitimately undone in games. They do have weaknesses, but they're a good side and they'll be fine. So don't feel bad for them, because the doctor is about to see them.
I've got something in my mind. It's been in my head since Monday night, and if I don't say it, I'm going to kick myself. What I was really happy about the Burnley game is I spoke a couple of weeks ago about Tottenham being undone by chaos, by teams just kind of lumping them in, lumping the ball in the box, and I was very happy at how we managed the chaos that Chris Wood, who's an absolute slab of a human being, and Ashley Barnes created. They don't do anything, but they do everything. They're just throwing their dinner around and just smearing the walls with gravy and chucking potatoes at everybody. I just thought how we managed their chaos was really good. And Brighton are terrible. I watched Brighton against West Brom and I thought West Brom deserved 3 points. I thought Brighton are bad. I don't think they're defensively as good as they are. Lamptey's great, but their centre-backs are not good at all. And I expect us to run riot through Brighton.
Yeah, I mean, it's the space behind and outside their wide centre-backs, which is the place to attack. So they play back three. They're very aggressive with their wing-backs, who are Lamptey, who's a star in the making, and March, who has spent a lot, not always March, but March, who spent a lot of his career recognised more as a winger. So there's their space in behind in those areas. Probably more on their right behind. I think it'll be Webster rather than Byrne, who has fullback experience. But yeah, that's the way. And I think that Bissouma can be dragged out of position a little bit as well. A special player on the ball, but has frailties and commits a lot of fouls. So yeah.
You think Bissouma will play? I wondered whether they might.
Is he a risk? Is he a?
Well, I thought they might go with Alzate in the sort of more holding role, because whenever I've seen him this season, he's been really impressive.
That would
be
smart.
He's much more disciplined than Bissouma. Bissouma's very good in the ball, though. Very, very good in the ball. Mm-hmm. I do like him as a player. We were linked with him at one point.
Yep.
Going back to Burnley briefly, Bardi is, of course, absolutely right about how well we handled their air raid offence. and Toby Alderweireld was magnificent, I thought, despite sort of losing an eye early on in the match. He was brilliant, and it absolutely reassured me that he is our best centre-back still. I know he's got the hunch, Bardi. He's got the hunch now, but he is still our best centre-back as it stands, and he led by example in that match. He was fantastic, really fantastic. And you're right that Barnes and Wood are pie and mash footballers, but they also have a fair amount of intelligence to their game as well. They know when a teammate has been shuttled into a position where all he can do is launch the ball forward, and they time their runs into the channels immaculately to receive, take one or two touches to hold the play up, and then wait for a teammate to join them. And they did it time and again, really effectively. They struggled to get into the box often, Burnley. But some of their attacking play, it's not nice on the eye, but you can see what they're trying to do, and it's very effective. It's really effective. And I as ever with Sean Dyche, I come away feeling impressed by what a team with those resources has managed to achieve for such a long period of time. I think Burnley get a very raw deal. They punch well above their weight season after season after season, and it's very impressive to me. Not that I would ever want Sean Dyche at my club, but he does a great job.
Yeah, I'm happy to only watch him twice a year. I'm more than I don't think I would ever watch him in any other game, because they're not pretty.
Absolutely, I fully agree. Anything else to say on Burnley from either of you? No. And do either of you feel as though your thoughts on our season as a whole have changed after the last two matches?
I've had to calm down a little bit. I've had to rein in a little bit. I don't know. Maybe I got drawn into this idea that football has changed back around enough to favour Jose Mourinho. Burnley, basically, Burnley are a team who normally play a very compact style of football. People think of Burnley as always playing in a super, super low block, but they will also actually often press pretty high and bring the defenders up. What they did against us was play in a non-compact way, press high and keep defenders deep. Because when teams press us, we play over the top. And so we just played to where their centre-backs already were. And there was a lot of space in midfield. And I thought that we would have the wherewithal to recognise that and take advantage of that. Because it's very easy to take advantage of that. Very being relative, of course. Mm-hmm. And just get Ndombele on the ball more and deeper and get Sissoko running with the ball at his feet. And we couldn't get that going for us. And I think that's a bit disappointing and maybe slightly just knocked me down, just down a peg.
Yeah, I thought all of our good moments in the Burnley get match basically came when Ndombele dropped deep and picked up the ball.
Yeah.
And it should have, in my view, he should have moved deeper earlier in the game and we might have had more success. He was playing essentially as a 10. And I guess the idea behind that was that one way of breaking down a packed defence is by having a player who's really good in the ball, who can run at them and commit and get players to commit. But he didn't really ever have opportunities. He wasn't ever found. This is the problem. He's like our best ball progressor. So if he's the one receiving the ball, who's passing it to him? It's definitely not going to be Sissoko because he's really, really bad at that. So you kind of needed Ndombele as the 6, the 8 and the 10. And unfortunately, we only have one of them.
What was quite interesting is after 5-6 years of Pochettino, where he didn't really change for the opposition. He had his way of playing and that was his style. It was interesting to see Spurs completely adapt to the opponents who were playing. So we didn't play Reguilón and Aurier at fullback. We went with two bigger fullbacks and we went with Sissoko midfield when perhaps we could have gone with Lo Celso or even Winks. So it was strange to see Spurs do that because of what they were anticipated to play against. So I mean, I don't know if that's a positive or a negative, but it was just an interesting thing that I saw from the game. When I was watching it, I did think, had Reguilón played in left back, the amount of space that Ben Davies was getting, perhaps he could have caused some damage. But then, of course, it would have got absolutely destroyed in the air. So I think there was a balancing act, and I think Jose just pulled it. Well, he did pull it off because we won, but I think he just got away with it there.
Absolutely. So moving on to some questions, and bear in mind these were sent in before the Antwerp game. So the first one, Matt Smith from Patreon says, so after last night's game, meaning Burnley, in fact it was last. It was after the last game, he says, I have two questions. What did you make of Vinicius's debut and Ben Davies at left centre back? Let's talk about Vinicius first. He had a really, really impressive match against Lask, much less impressive against Royal Antwerp, although there were still a couple of moments which were good. But Nathan, any immediate thoughts on Vinicius?
Look good. It's a weird one because he's someone who's come towards us like we looked at him, didn't we? We did a video on him and we saw this player who he runs in behind and also he runs in behind and then some other times he runs in behind and doesn't really do many other things than that. He has the technical ability to find other players, to contribute, to hold the play. But for the most part, he's goals, 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 goals. And he came on and did he get a hat-trick of assists or was it only two?
Two assists. But they were both very, very impressive.
Yeah. I mean, essentially what happened is he ran in behind at an angle and then played the reverse pass to a player arriving in the box. So it's not like he's been a different player. It's just a slight tweak of different things. But yeah, I thought he looked good. I was even more impressed. I was really, really impressed with Ben Davies at left centre back against Lask. And linear time has not treated that take well. there's a lot of conversation going around right now about how terrible Ben Davies is, what an absolute abomination of a centre back Ben Davies is, how he should never, ever, ever play centre back or maybe even football again because he got fouled dawdling on the ball and we conceded a goal. I thought he was okay. I didn't think he was as good as he was against Lask. Again, I was really impressed with his performance against Lask. I thought it was okay. It was not Ben Davies' fault that we couldn't progress the ball up the pitch. I promise it wasn't him. He was fine. He's fine. He's always going to have a defensive shortcoming in terms of his height. And it's always there are always going to be opposition who it is inappropriate to play Ben Davies against. He's always going to deny us an extra tall person at set pieces. Although maybe we could spend some time coming to him and it wouldn't be such a big deal. I'm someone who's been reluctant on the idea because we've had the Ben Davies at centre-back question on this podcast, you know, every 2 months for 3 years. Like, Ben Davies plays centre-back for Wales. Could he do a job for us? Now we have an injury crisis at centre-back. And I said, maybe in a three, but probably not really. You wouldn't really want to see that. And I was really, really impressed with him against Lask. So if he gets played at centre-back again, bearing in mind that he wasn't one of the 1, 2, 3, 4 substitutes made at half time. Don't be shocked. The reason he's going to be played there again, probably, I suspect, is because he's doing fine.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't got overexcited about Spurs' apparent title challenge, but I also, like you, got overexcited about Ben Davies' performance against Lask. And I went a layer deeper in my mind. I was thinking, this is perfect because we've got this aging left back who doesn't have the physical conditioning to get up and down the flank anymore, but he's got a really good left foot and he's got a good pass on him. And so he can play centre back and bring the ball out and pass it to Reguilon, who is a really, really good attacking left back. And what that means is he's no longer in rotation for left back. So it opens up a space for Dennis Sirkin to be our backup left back and everything is well in the world. That's how my mind worked after Ben Davies' performance against Lask. And I agree with you that he wasn't as bad as people are saying about the after the Antwerp match. It wasn't terrible and he should get played there again, but when you concede a goal after a centre back is robbed of the ball, it's going to lead to takes. That's inevitable. And it wasn't a great moment. And I don't think he was fouled, to
really
be honest. I thought Mbakani got a bit of the ball and Davis just kind of crumpled to the floor. Okay. To be honest, that's actually something else I noted down to comment on. I noticed this against Burnley, and you know, Davis's moment, it didn't even occur to me while I was watching the game, but now I'm saying it, now I'm thinking about it, it's relevant, I think. We kept going to ground against Burnley and claiming for fouls and free kicks before the whistle had blown, and I thought, ooh, have we gone a bit too far with this clever cunts thing? are we now trying it on a bit too much, and do we need to scale it back a little bit and actually start playing to the fucking whistle? But I mean, Ben Davies was on the floor prone anyway, so it's not like he's going to get back up and actually be able to make a difference. But he was definitely looking for a free kick for sure. Bardi, are you willing to throw Ben Davies off a cliff?
No, but I have been
stick with him.
I have enjoyed you guys talking about Ben Davies like he's mid-30s Paolo Maldini deciding to move into centre back because he doesn't have the engine. He doesn't have the engine anymore. He was fine, you know. He made a mistake. He got caught. We lost the game. We didn't lose the game because of him. I was a bit upset Vinicius did come off. I thought that was a bit harsh. It's very harsh on a striker. We've seen Kane not do anything for 89 minutes and then score a goal.
Yep.
I think yeah, if Lo Celso and Bergwijn did annoy me in that first half, so I can understand if he was annoying me, he really must have annoyed Jose. But I would have kept Vinicius on the pitch, and I don't think we didn't learn anything. If you're going to lose, at least let's take something away from it. And I think keeping Vinicius on the pitch for 90 minutes wouldn't have been an issue for me. But I was happy with his debut. He looked better than Vincent Janssen, which is a massive positive.
Yeah, I do feel, like Nathan said, having watched lots of his highlights of him just basically being on the end of things in the box, I do wonder if these two assists are going to be a bit like when Moussa Dembele scored that goal against, I think, Norwich on his debut and then basically never scored again for us, except that amazing thumping volley in the Europa League. Maybe that isn't a sign of things to come, or maybe he's instantly learnt from Harry Kane, the best assisting striker in world football right now. This question, which was again asked after the last game, feels even more relevant now. This is from I Want Pie through our Discord channel. It says, bit late, should have got this in before this week's pod, but how much of Davinson Sanchez's struggles against West Ham were due to him playing on the left? I think he's looked dodgy all season, but it was a real step up at the weekend. He looked much more Nora Shield on the right against Lask, but that was Lask. Bardi, you're Davinson Sanchez's biggest supporter on this podcast. what have you made? I mean, surely you're not that delighted with his performances this season, but what do you think is going wrong for him?
He's in a bad place. He's not doing the simple things correctly anymore, and I'm concerned about him. There's something at play there. He's not even at the moment. He's not first choice. He's dropping down the ranking order for the Colombian national team as well. There's question marks around him there. Yeah, I'm not sure what's happened to him. He's gone from quite a promising defender to someone who's been in a bit of a funk now for a while. I did think it was perhaps because he didn't have anyone to play alongside him and we didn't have a defensive midfielder, but yeah, I don't know. I'm hoping it's not terminal because I still think there's a good defender in him, but I'm not sure what's going wrong, but he's definitely more error prone than he used to be.
I saw a report today saying that James Rodriguez is trying to convince Everton to sign Davinson Sanchez to play alongside Mina, and they would be prepared to pay 45 million for him.
Yeah.
Nathan, that sounds like the perfect deal.
Deal done. I like Davinson Sanchez. I think, you know, he's got ability. He's certainly got athleticism. He's not a bad centre back by any means. Playing him on the left is a war crime. I couldn't believe when I saw that against West Ham.
He's shown time and time again that he's not happy on the left.
Have we played him on the left that much?
I think he played in his first season. I recall him playing on the left and looking ugly.
He looks uncomfortable on the ball on the right.
True.
So it's like that, you know, a technical player can move over to the other side. Someone who's already nervous on their favoured side is always going to have a horrible time playing on the left, you know. Not that necessarily means we have to offload him, but if we can get our money back on him, I think I probably would.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
I still don't think our centre-backs are as bad a problem as maybe other teams have at this moment. Like Liverpool now, we're losing Fabinho and everything else. But yeah, he's not developed. From the guy that arrived, he hasn't developed in the way that I had a hot take where I said he's going to be better than Ledley King. Yeah, at some point I'm going to have to apologise for that, but that day hasn't come yet. So he hasn't developed how I wanted him to develop. And there's the new Colombian centre back on the block, Carlos Cuesta at Genk, 21-year-old. He's going to take his place in the national team at some point.
Okay, I think probably it's likely that Dyer and Alvarez will be our first choice centre backs for the next few Premier League games
until Ben Davies takes is that
well maybe until Joe Roden earns a start and then keeps his place, or Jafet Tanganga comes back from injury.
We'll be playing Davies and Roden together and saying, oh, the problem is Roden's, he's not his best when he's on the right side, we need a right footer to
the Welsh boys at the centre, the heart of our defence. Joey Gentile, who is from Houston Spurs, shout out Houston Spurs. He says, question, how many Premier League teams would start Serge Aurier, as in nailed on starter, not asking about rotation? I thought Aurier had a really bad game against Antwerp. I was keeping a close eye on him because I was actually really pleasantly surprised by some of his early performances. And I was thinking, wow, has the introduction of Matt Doherty just kind of completely changed Aurier's mindset, and suddenly he's now concentrating and he's playing really sensibly and he's doing the simple things well? He was horrible against Antwerp. He failed to track his man several times. He was ball-watching various times. He was on that side of the defence with Sanchez where basically all of their attacks came from, and it was not a good performance. He did put in one really good cross, though. So there's that.
Yay.
But Nathan, how many teams do you think he'd get into in the Premier League?
About 10. I don't know. Yeah. I'd have to go through the list and think about their options and finance.
It's about 10,
yeah,
isn't
it's
it?
It's about 10. What I said before about Serge Aurier is, if he has a strong run of games, we know that they're going to come to an end. We know the age that he's at. We know the problems he comes with. He has a good run of games going up to January. Do our best to flog him in January. The problem is that the Serge Aurier experience has come back around far too early. What we do is we say that he's injured. We pretend that he has nothing that he can't recover from, nothing that'd be a worry about. Illness. We pretend that he's ill until January, so that, because no one watched the Antwerp game. Don't worry about that. No one watched. Other clubs didn't watch a 6 p.m. Thursday night Europa League game, that's fine. That we can sweep under the rug. But if he puts in two or three games like that in the Premier League between now and January, the gig is over. We need a weekend at Bernie's, Serge Aurier.
It's okay, mate. They're all on Sky Box Office. No one's gonna see them. So he can play them in every game that's on Sky Box Office. Bardi, do you think Southampton would play Serge Aurier over Kyle Walker-Peters?
No, but I think it's probably a little bit more than 10. I think you're getting about 12 to 13 teams. I still think there's a right back in there somewhere that somebody will be fooled by. They'll see his assist stats, and he'll get in more teams than you think.
That's a good question.
They wouldn't, though, would they?
They wouldn't.
They really wouldn't.
Of course not.
Oh, sorry. I'm enjoying it far too much. I shouldn't be enjoying my own questions.
Windy's lap of honour.
Yeah, it seriously is. Seriously. I'm a pathetic man. I'm absolutely pathetic.
Should we play the Harry Kane clip again? Man. Remember that one time?
I'm crying. I'm actually crying. Oh, God. Right, snap out of it, man. Dermot Wilson, he says, I'm just wondering how much an effect the clocks going backwards would have had on the fitness of our players with that Burnley performance. We definitely didn't look as sharp as in most of our previous games. He adds, a bit off topic, personally, I'd love to get rid of daylight saving hours because apparently research shows that clocks changing can have an increase in the chance of someone having a heart attack soon after. I've never heard that, and I kind of want to do some research into that now. But it's something I'd not considered before, but I know that my own body clock is definitely a little bit, I know it's only an hour, but my own body clock is always thrown by the daylight saving time. What do you think, Bard? Do you think there's any realistic chance that this has an impact on players?
I don't know, Mike. I was eavesdropping into my wife's conversation today, and she was at the other end of the table. She kept saying Mercurio regresando, so about something about Mercury is regressed or something, and it's to do with the changing of the
retrograde.
It must be that. I don't know, but it's something about Mercury has regressed. Like Aurier has, and that's the reason why we're the reason why I'm feeling more tired and maybe not as motivated with my work stuff and everything else, and that's what she's convinced by it. So if my wife is convinced that Mercury is regresando, then I'm convinced it has had an effect on Tottenham as well.
Nathan, as a man who is basically nocturnal, how does daylight savings time affect your life?
I don't get to see the sun anymore.
So basically, either way, there's no daylight saved for you.
No, it's the opposite. It's daylight withdrawn. So yeah. I'm not the biggest fan. The thing is, even for real adults who have a sensible sleeping pattern, most people aren't getting up at six every single day, especially with so many people working from home at the moment. The idea that we base our time zones around farming habits is a little much. I think most people, given the choice, would be happy to wake in darkness and get an hour at the end of the day so they can come home in the light. Again, it's irrelevant to me. Well, it's not irrelevant to me, but I shouldn't be given an opinion on this because I'm an abomination.
But what do you think about the impact on footballers?
I have no idea. What are you talking about? What a terrible question. Sorry, I won't fight. What are you on about, mate?
Fine, it is interesting.
Fine. Well, Dermot, I thought it was a really good question.
Oh,
it's something I hadn't considered before. The fact that Nathan hates you, don't take it personally. Bardi and I will always be here for you. And I didn't think your question was stupid at all.
But it is, daylight is important. So I'm a bit concerned now about Nathan and his vitamin D intake. So take some pills, man. I'm worried about you not seeing.
That's right. I buy Sunny Delight by the gallon, so I'll be fine.
Jeez, do you actually?
No, God, no, imagine.
It turned the people orange. Do you remember that? It was meant to be this healthy thing and the whole country went orange. Brilliant.
That is where we're ending the podcast. On that line. The whole country went orange.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, E. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.